Hello, everyone. Welcome to the world's most neon-infused podcast. That's right. It's Uncanny Tracks covers The Penguin and Nicholas Winding Refn's Too Old to Die Young, exclusively available on Amazon Prime. Dear God, that's a mouthful. I am Bob in Cascadia. That is Matt in the Southland. Matt, how are you doing tonight?
Doing pretty well, Bob. Man, Penguin aired Thursday. It was great. Is it going to continue airing on Thursday, or is it going to move to Sunday?
It's pretty annoying. So it's usually got to air on Sunday nights.
Okay.
And so no new episode this Sunday night, and then episode 2 next Sunday night, which means, dear listeners, that our coverage is going to be coming out the Saturday after.
It airs on Sundays, and we record on Saturday, so you got a whole week in between. So you're not going to get the latest coverage quickly.
We'll be a good refresher before the next episode.
And on top of that, too, we've got this other show that we're covering with this that is, if you watched our coverage of, was it Strange New Worlds versus Copenhagen Cowboy?
It was Star Trek Picard Season 2 versus Copenhagen Cowboy.
There we go, Copenhagen Cowboy. If you liked Copenhagen Cowboy, if you watched that with us, then you're going to really, really like this other show that Bob is forcing me to watch that I thought I was not going to like at first because of the runtime, but it's actually pretty good.
That's the two warnings about this show are the runtimes. This is Too Old to Die Young, not The Penguin. Although I do hope The Penguin gets its runtime under an hour in future episodes.
Yeah, Penguin. Shave off some of that stuff.
But Too Old to Die Young, my God. I remember the episodes were long, but I didn't remember 90 minutes.
They're damn mini movies, Bob. On top of that, too, this is a very acquired taste. So if you didn't like Copenhagen Cowboy, we will understand if you don't like this show too, but we like to cover two shows just to give people another thing to watch.
Exactly. And this, for whatever reason, when I saw the Penguin trailer way back when, and I saw Colin Farrell doing his James Gandolfini as the Penguin, I was, I want to watch that, which I know makes Matt's brother think I'm a psychopath. And I also was, well, this would be the natural place to put Too Old to Die Young. Because after we did Copenhagen Cowboy against Star Trek Picard Season 2, and spoilers, Copenhagen Cowboy was much better than Star Trek Picard Season 2.
That's true.
I really want to fit in Refn's other show, his earlier show from 2019 on Prime, which, man, it's annoying they don't have DVDs out of this 5 years later, so I couldn't just buy the DVDs instead of having to pay for Prime for like 5 months to do it.
Yeah, let me go ahead and complain about Prime here. Prime with its ads needs to go away. I already pay a subscription fee for Prime. It's perfectly priced what I pay. I can't believe I now have to go through ads on Prime.
Matt, I see you. I hear you. You're valid. You're right. It is only like a dollar or two more a month.
So. Oh, is it? I don't want to have to go through that trouble, though. I don't have to go through the trouble of finding that, fixing it. I've been a loyal customer. They have plenty of money. I don't think they need more money.
I know. I agree with you. You're totally right. You're totally right. And I would even say it's actually really annoying how they do it because they bill you twice. They bill you for the Prime, and then they bill you for the $2 at different times of the month.
Wow. So
it's really annoying.
Yeah.
I don't care for it. But I watch a lot of Prime shows with one of my boys, and I left the ads on 1 week to torture him. And then I was, oh, God, I'm hurting myself as much as I'm hurting him.
Yeah, the ads are awful. I didn't realize how much I hated them until I started watching this.
Oh, God. And how many ads must they hit you with during episodes?
Let's get into the coverage here of The Penguin.
Dear listeners, we're always going to do The Penguin first. So if you really, really don't want to hear what our man Nicholas Winding Refn was up to in 2019.
You can stop listening. We'll let you know when to stop listening. Don't worry.
Yeah. Episode 1 is After Hours, Matt. And I just wanted to begin by observing that it's funny, given how much Batman films have been ripping off Martin Scorsese lately, specifically the first Joker movie is a little bit King of New York and a little bit Taxi Driver. It's a little funny to begin with the title of a Scorsese film, although, yes, I know After Hours is a generic, just the title of the Scorsese film. But it's very funny to begin with that. And then the second episode title is a Spike Lee film, Inside Man, although I know that's also a pretty generic title. But it looks like they dropped the gimmick naming episodes after films after the first two.
Okay, so you looked ahead. Yeah, I didn't look ahead. Didn't want any spoilers.
The thing was, I was a little annoyed when watching this that they killed Carmine Falcone in the Batman. I would also like to note that even though I just watched the Batman for the first time a month ago, I didn't remember that they had killed Carmine.
That was the whole part of the end of the film. That's Riddler kills Carmine Falcone.
In the third hour of that movie, I was just getting through it, man. I lost a lot of the attention for the finer details of the plot. And by the finer details of the plot, I mean the major things that happened.
When the Batman dropped in theaters, Bob, I went to see it. I actually went to see it twice, once with my wife, once with my brother. It was pretty good. But then we did podcast coverage of it, which you hated because I just pretty much told you the entire plot of the Batman. And you hated it. Yeah, you hated it. But then you decided to watch it before this. I'm just like, Bob, come on. What the hell?
Well, look, in my defense, I never intended to see it when they said they were going to do a Penguin spinoff show. I was like, oh, that's a stupid idea. But then I saw that trailer and I was, oh, man, Colin Farrell actually is doing a really good performance in the trailer. And it is sort of a James Gandolfini ripoff. And on the one hand, it is, look, I like this show a lot. It is a little bit, to me, represents the lowering of the HBO brand that they're doing a DC show for HBO and that it, in some ways it's really just a straight ripoff of the best HBO show or one of the best HBO shows.
And it's on their coveted Sunday night slot.
Yeah, yeah. Their coveted Sunday night slot. So a little something degraded about that, I do have to admit. It leaves a bad taste in my mouth. But nonetheless, what Colin Farrell did in the preview, did in this, is interesting, and I'm not sad to watch the rest.
So what you're saying is, Bob, this isn't going to be part of the Criterion Collection?
No, it's not, because they don't release TV shows for the most part. There's a couple, but for the most part.
Well, okay.
These TV shows. But yeah, so I was surprised. I was surprised to remember that Carmine Falcone was dead. And it also made me a little sad, because I thought, oh, Colin Farrell versus John Turturro, who played Carmine Falcone, great actor John Turturro, great mob actor. That would have been a really good face down, especially when we're opening with the Penguin versus Alberto Falcone. And Alberto is not his father, right?
Right.
Which the show makes very clear. I would also say Alberto was played by Michael Zegan. I didn't recognize him, but I looked him up. And another HBO show, which if you wanted to argue that HBO was already degraded because they were chasing The Sopranos, you could argue that Boardwalk Empire already degraded HBO in that way. But on Boardwalk Empire, this mob show, Zegan played Bugsy Siegel. He was pretty good in that role. And again, even though arguably Boardwalk Empire degrades HBO, it was a great mob show. I really enjoyed it. So not sad to see Bugsy Siegel back.
They just keep dropping these mob shows, Bob, because they want to relight that fire The Sopranos had back in the day.
Did you ever watch any of Boardwalk?
I watched the first season of Boardwalk, yes.
Okay, so my hard pitch to you is that I stopped watching the show after the first season. I didn't like it very much.
That's what I did, yeah.
The second season, it takes it the whole season, but it corrects my problem.
Okay.
The third and the fourth seasons are two of the best seasons ever on television. But there will be moments in seasons 2, 3, and 4 of Boardwalk Empire, if you ever watch them, where you want to quit the show and power through. And the end of the season always wraps it up perfectly.
Right. And I think that was my problem going into it. Because during the first season, there were sometimes I did want to drop it, but yeah. I just kept on going because it was interesting.
It could be a little bit of a drag. And then the sad thing is, I think season 5 is terrible. It drops focus on a lot of characters that I cared about. And basically, a lot of what season 5 does is flashbacks that just reestablishes stuff we already knew from season 1. And so I really didn't care for season 5. But I think seasons 2, 3, and 4 are great television.
All right, Bob, back to Penguin.
Speaking of the Batman, the film, Matt, even though we said back to Penguin, did Penguin waddle in the Batman? That's another thing I just totally didn't register from.
Okay. He did. It wasn't as, I don't think it was pronounced, but he did have the brace. You could see the brace in some scenes.
In fairness to me, not just me, but one of my boys was also like, yeah, I didn't remember that he waddled.
It's not as pronounced as what you would expect, but the whole idea that he has the club foot thing, that's there.
It was pretty wild, that opening scene where he's walking into the building and he's got the umbrella out because he's raining and he's doing his waddle. It felt like an homage to Burgess Meredith on the 60s show.
The whole thing with the purple of his car, which I thought was interesting, a complete tie-in to the original character.
I called it the Penguin Mobile. Did you like this Penguin Mobile?
That's a Lamborghini, and purple is definitely the throwback, but he also had a purple Maserati, and that's the one that he flips over.
I remember it being a nice car, but I didn't remember it so flashy.
It was dark too, so you couldn't tell it was purple at that time.
It makes sense. It's a little bit of like, oh, we got to translate a comic book supervillain thing into something a real person might do. The overall question, though, for and really this goes for the whole show, is when Colin Farrell's doing the Penguin, does he remind you more of Robert De Niro, or does he remind you more of James Gandolfini?
James Gandolfini, especially in the beginning of the episode, just when he's interacting with, what's the character's name, Vic? I get real James Gandolfini vibes. More Robert De Niro when he's interacting with the mob guys.
In the trailer for this, like I said, James Gandolfini, but when I was watching him in The Batman, the movie, he reminded me more of
De Niro. Way more De Niro in the movie.
I was thinking about Vic in terms of Jason Todd, but there's also, people have watched The Sopranos, Tony has a nebulous nephew. It's not really his nephew, but he calls him his nephew, Christopher.
Mm-hmm.
Tony and Christopher's relationship is different than the Penguin and Vic's, but you could definitely see the similarity there. So he actually shows up later in the show, but I figured we'd talk about him since Alberto Falcone and the Penguin mentioned him, setting him up to show up later. Do you remember Sal Maroni from the comics?
He's the guy who disfigures Harvey Dent, right? Turns him into Two-Face?
Yeah, you're right. I was thinking he was the one who killed Robin's parents, but no, that's Boss Zuko.
It's really weird. We know all these fictional mob characters.
Maroni and Zuko have been around longer than the Falcones, and so there's all these different versions in the animated series and some movies, different flashbacks,
right,
comics, and different tellings of year one.
The one that most recently stuck out to me, Bob, was Sal Maroni, was Eric Roberts of Sal Maroni in The Dark Knight, mainly because
that
actor is now on Dancing with the Stars, and that's the brother of Julia Roberts, and he's called to the whole storm saying that he's responsible for her career.
Oh, wow. Cocaine's a dangerous
drug. Oh, yeah.
As we'll get to in Too Old to Die Young, I will say, and obviously, folks, if this wasn't clear already, we're getting into spoiler territory here, but I really love the cut at the beginning of the Penguin where it was the Penguin about to say fuck, jump to the title card, and then we jump to him body bagging Alberto because he said fuck when he shot Alberto.
When you did finally meet Vic Aguilar, you thought it was more of a Jason Todd character.
It's totally, the introduction is totally post-crisis Jason Todd or Dick Tracy Jr. He and his gang are trying to steal the hubcaps off of Penguin Mahill.
Part of me thought that that was the kid from the subway at the beginning of the Batman. The one that, because this guy, he looks similar. I have to try to connect everything. Because that was also the dude that played Tim Drake in Titans. But it's not the same actor.
Oh.
They look so similar. It's just weird.
The kid from the beginning of the Batman is Tim Drake from Titans.
Correct, yes.
Oh, okay. I totally didn't register that. That's interesting.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, we have Vic doing his own thing here. Honestly, more Jason Todd than Christopher from The Sopranos. The show makes a point of bringing up the Penguin's family in this, and we'll get to it more of it in a minute, but he mentions his brothers. I just read a really terrible Penguin comic by Tom King, and the Penguin has a lot of family show up in that one, so spoilers, do you think we're going to get the Penguin brothers in this show?
I hope not, but we might. They might go in that direction. I really hope they don't. But I've been reading some of Tom King lately, and I have to say that City of Bane is so mediocre, but Killing Time is excellent. Out of all the Tom King I've read, I think it's probably one of the best ones. What should we read if we want to read good Tom King, according to you?
I want us to cover Gotham Year One at some point. I don't know if we're ever going to get to that, but I want us to cover that at some point. We already did cover Supergirl, but the episode got lost. That's great.
Yeah.
Omega Men and The Vision are really good. Mr. Miracle's really good. I really like The Human Target.
I liked Killing Time. If you don't like Killing Time, it's your problem. You don't like heist things. You don't like...
I really almost now think we need to do the Tom King Batman run at whole, just because it seems like... I don't remember City of Bane that well, nor even... I think even when I read it, like, I liked it, but I'm not, like, super defensive about it.
Yeah.
But it's funny that I like City of Bane, but I just
exact opposite.
I will give Killing Time one credit for one thing. It is doing a long Halloween Dark Victory shtick, but it does it in 6 issues rather than 13.
Yeah, here.
And so I appreciate it. So, Matt, I would say maybe you should read The Penguin because it's basically a sequel to Killing Time.
Oh, well, maybe I need to pick that up.
I would say don't read the Zero issue, which is written by Tom King, and it's written by Chip Zdarsky, and is tying into current things in the Chip Zdarsky run, which I didn't understand and didn't care about.
The Chip Zdarsky run, it's acquired taste. Bob, I did read something last night called Penguin Pain and Prejudice. by Greg Hurwitz.
I believe he's a douchebag. I believe he's a Jordan Peterson boy.
Yeah, it sucked.
I've read one of his novels and stuff, but I liked some of his punishment.
It wasn't the worst, but it was mediocre. It wasn't anything great.
Isn't that the one where the penguin infects some guy with HIV?
He has some sort of disease. It isn't specifically HIV. But the thing is that the penguin's much more menacing in this, and he builds, like, penguin robots. But they do have his mother in here, and that's what I was this series, with his interactions with his mother in this comic and what I see here are very similar, which I hadn't really been exposed to much previously.
I don't think that comes up in the comics a lot. I think it's more like a Batman Returns thing. So, Tom King, real mixed recommendations from Uncanny Track.
Yeah, screw you, Tom King, making us divisive.
I'm grateful to Tom. Tom King has written some of the worst comics ever. He's written some of the best comics ever. The thing I appreciate about Tom King is also this thing I appreciate about Mark Russell. If I'm reading a Brian Azzarello comic or a Greg comic, I'm going to like it. I like Brian Azzarello. I like Greg. I have no idea when I read a Tom King or a Mark Russell comic, am I going to think this is one of the best things ever written, or am I going to think this is absolute crap? I really like not knowing.
That's a good way to enter things. But it's blind bags, just opening them up and finding it. It's like gambling.
When I reach under the blanket to pet my cat, sometimes she'll be soft and cute, and sometimes she'll bite the cut that she caused on my finger. And it's interesting.
That is you, Tom King.
You're basically my cat.
Yeah.
Except for my cat didn't work for the CIA and didn't do war crimes. But otherwise, you're exactly the same.
Well, continue with your melodrama between the cat and the bat, using Bob's cat as a basis.
We'll mostly get off like larger Batman mythos points after this, but you get Sofia Falcone. Famously, she's a little crazy in the comics, and here she's been released from Arkham. She even has a nice certificate saying she was released from Arkham. And I was wondering, did they mention Carmine's daughter being in Arkham in the movie? I just
thought
they might have, since they made such a big deal about Martha Wayne having been in Arkham.
No, they haven't mentioned anything about it. And in the comic books, though, we're introduced to her in The Long Halloween.
It might be Dark Victory instead of The Long. Definitely Alberto's in Long Halloween, but Sophia might not show up till Dark Victory. It's been a long.
Okay.
Right. Do you want to run down the supporting cast, Matt, since I've been talking?
We've got Carmen Ejojo plays Penguin's girlfriend, Eve. She was Purple Haze's wife in True Detective Season 3. We have Michael Kelly. He's playing Johnny Vitti. He played Kevin Spacey's fixer in House of Cards. We got James Medeo. He plays Milos Grappa. He played a lost boy in Hook. Kristen Melody plays Sofia Falcone. She plays Patrick Wilson's wife in Fargo Season 2. And Bob, she also is the mother on How I Met Your Mother in the final season.
Yeah, and then she stars in a spinoff too, right?
I believe so, yes.
See, I knew this, but I just wanted to go with something that was more meaningful.
Deidre O'Connell plays Penguin's mom. She played a villain in the mediocre sci-fi western Outer Range. And then Clancy Brown plays Sal Maroney. He voices Lex Luthor. And then Clancy Brown also, he was the main antagonist in Dexter New Blood.
I'll never get there. I stopped after season 4.
You saved yourself a lot of pain and suffering. Good job.
It's not often that I can quit shows cold turkey and just be like, nope, no more. But and then, I did it with Dexter.
And then New Blood was so forgettable that I thought Clancy Brown was in Justified. That I had to go look. I just kept associating him with some of the characters in the Justified and didn't even think of Dexter New Blood until Internet Movie Database him.
There's another like little thing which is funny because you have Penguin and Vic hanging out in Penguin's apartment watching Gilda, specifically watching Rita Hayworth sing Put the Blame on Mame from Gilda. That's a great movie. I was actually thinking about making my friends watch that movie. I've got the DVD pulled out for my movie night. And it was, man, nice to see that in the Penguin.
So were you, did you like how her song inspired his plan?
I did like that. Very clever. Yeah. One of the things I liked about the Batman was I thought it was a really cool version of Gotham City. Definitely a better version than we saw in like the Zack Snyder, the Christopher Nolan film. Mostly, I think the city looks good here too. But man, there is a car chase with the Penguin Mobile, and it seems like the backgrounds in that car chase are largely CGI'd, and it just looked real bad. I was wondering if it stood out to you.
That stuck out a little bit. And that's what they get for trying to do like car chases and television shows that, I mean, you can do them well, but unless you're like putting a lot of money into, and you've already had a fantastic car chase in the film, a very memorable car chase that sticks with you. And it's like the main thing people think about with the Penguin, because they kept showing that, even in the trailers, they kept showing that image of his car upside down and Batman walking toward him, that whole creepy scene right then. I don't think they needed a car chase, period. They could have done something else.
That's fair. I agree with you that, like, since you're not going to do it as well as the film, it's just going to invite unflattering comparisons to the film.
they show Vic's license at one point. This fits in with your with what you were talking about with Gotham City and how it looks great and everything. It says that Gotham City is confirmed to be in the state of New Jersey. Are you okay with that?
I like that.
Yeah, I think that's cool, too.
Been confirmed a couple of times in the comics in the late 80s, early 90s. And I don't know if you ever have seen, there was a book, might have even come out to support role-playing games, but there was a book called The Atlas of the DC Universe. And I never had the book, but I don't know if it's still online, but somebody had put a lot of stuff from it online. And 15 years ago, I saw this online, and there's a map of where all the fictional cities in DC are in the states. And they put Gotham in New Jersey and Metropolis in Delaware. And I always liked both of those choices.
Okay. Metropolis in Delaware. That's interesting. Makes sense. At one point, Penguin's butt naked and they're torturing him. And apparently he had a prosthetic penis that you don't see, but just in case the film caught it, they wanted to make sure there was one there. What do you think about that, Bob?
Oh, interesting. Interesting. When you put that in the notes, you didn't mention that you don't see it. And so it was, oh man, am I really such a or that I missed that dick? Colin Farrell showed that I missed it.
No.
But no, I did not in fact miss it. Colin Farrell wanting to respect his privacy. I would respect it more if he did hang dong. Especially since didn't he, I mean, granted this was probably filmed before it, but didn't he just have a sex tape leak?
Don't keep up with
it. I haven't seen it. I did think the torture scene was pretty well done. We have the gag here at the end that we get Vic staging Alberto's car running into the Falcone estate with Alberto's corpse in the trunk. And I have to say, when it first happened, I was like, really? It doesn't seem just competent enough to carry off something like that in a way to fool these mob bosses, right?
So my thoughts exactly. My thoughts exactly, yes.
At the end, when he and the Penguin are having their slushies or whatever, suicide style, and the Penguin is like critiquing his execution. That really made me laugh and did a lot to be, I'll let Vic have this. Any thoughts on this being like so influenced by Long Halloween and Dark Victory? I mean, when we were running down the supporting cast, definitely Vidi, and I think Milos Grappa, and you know, obviously definitely Sophia Falcone are all from Dark Victory. Sal Maroni, although it doesn't originate there, is from Dark Victory.
I mean, it feels like I'm watching the Batmanless parts of those comics, which is good. You know, those were great comics for the most part. I like Long Halloween.
I'm a little more mixed on them, but it is astonishing the influence they've had on this show, The Batman, and then more just Batman Begins more than the other two. No, definitely not Batman Begins.
It's Jeff Loeb, correct?
Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale, and then unfortunately Tim Sale died a couple of years ago, or maybe just a year ago, but they are putting out a final series to complete the trilogy this year. I think the issue number one drops on Tuesday. It's called Last Halloween, and I think there's a little bit of art, maybe covers from Sale, but they're getting a lot of other people to actual issues.
I'll read that. Dark Victory is okay. I really love Long Halloween. Dark Victory was the sequel. I didn't like it as much, but you know, usually they tend to degrade as the sequels go on.
Yeah. If anything, though, it's interesting. I would agree with you that Dark Victory is worse than Long Halloween, but if I'm remembering right, it does a lot more. I just assumed they were putting out Last Halloween like they were putting out Dark Knight Returns 3. And maybe,
you mean Master Race? Yeah. Oh God, Dark Knight Strikes Again is so bad. Jesus, no, I'm not reading Dark Knight Strikes again. That's awful.
Maybe I'll do a solo episode.
Yeah.
Halloween coming out actually turns out to be Synergy. Who'd have thought?
There's going to be a lot more Synergy going forward, which can be good and bad.
Yeah. I think it's just going to be bad. Matt, what was your favorite shot of the pilot?
So there's a shot toward the beginning where you see the Gotham skyline, and then the camera pans down to like a gritty metal bridge. And then below the bridge is like a really nasty alley that Penguin's in. You literally feel like you went underground to see the scene, because you see the nice skyline, and then you see this nasty train bridge, and then below it is Penguin with like trash and shit all over the street and the alley. Beautiful shot.
It's funny because we were both criticizing the CGI in the car chase, but here I think we went with CGI tracking shots. Mine is the inverse. I like that shot at the end where it's the Penguin and Vic sitting on his car eating the slushies, and then it tracks up to show you the skyline again.
Wow, we picked like the exact opposites. I didn't realize that.
Who is your favorite?
Sophia Falcone steals the show. great character. Love
yeah,
it.
That's fair. That's
Glad
fair.
She's in the show.
Kristen Milioti's a very good actress, man. It's a good role for her. I enjoyed it. I'm going to flag Deirdre O'Connell as Penguin's mom. I think she does very well. I also just think it's really fascinating that if you watch The Sopranos, basically Penguin's relationship with his mother is the same as Tony's relationship to his mother, Livia.
Uh-huh.
There's just a difference that Tony's mother, Livia, is toxically negative, whereas Penguin's mom is toxically positive. So they just reverse the polarity.
Right. Kind of remind, do you remember in Goodfellas when like Joe Pesci goes back to visit his mom?
Oh, yeah. She's just like this oblivious old Catholic lady.
I thought we were going to get that at first, but then we realized as the show goes on that no, she knows everything.
If you go back the line of influence, Public Enemy and the Goodfellas are like the thing that they're doing, Livia and the Sopranos in reaction to, and then they're doing this in reaction to all.
Right.
So if you really don't want to hear about Nicholas Winding Refn, delete now, but we think you'll enjoy it. So we're talking about episode one of Too Old to Die Young as well. It's called The Devil. It and every other show or every other episode of the show Too Old to Die Young dropped on the 24th of June, 2019.
Stop right there, Bob. Hold on, wait.
Yes.
All 12 hours and 45 minutes of this show.
All 10 episodes, maybe.
Dropped on film one day. My God.
Matt, what do you think I was doing on the 24th and 25th of June, 2019?
You were watching every one of them. Jesus.
I actually wasn't. I watched it a little later and more or less week to week with my boy.
We already mentioned this, guys, but this episode was like an hour and a half long. These episodes are fairly long. I've only watched the first one. It's like a mini movie.
If you saw Copenhagen Cowboy with us, you know that Refn has, I would say, an almost unique ability to move glacially slow and it still be riveting.
That's the weird part, because you'll watch it and just be like, are we going somewhere? I can't take my eyes off this, but are we going somewhere? Are we going somewhere? And then you go somewhere and you're like, oh, that feels so good. Kind of like sex. So let me rephrase that. It's the lead up to sex. It's the foreplay.
I don't think we got a lot of 6 minute men amongst our listeners.
No. Let me start off by saying that the techno music immediately brought me back, because that is the same type of music that was used in Copenhagen Cowboy. It's that techno synth stuff that just like pops with you. His signature, I believe.
Definitely of his late stuff, Drive and Only God Forgives and The Neon Demon and all have that techno synth.
So, Bob, I didn't know this, but this was actually co-created by Ed Brubaker.
The sense I've gotten from interviews, and I haven't listened to them lately, and I don't want to misrepresent this, but I get the sense that Baker was not very satisfied by the experience.
Oh.
So he wrote it, but I think what he wrote is somewhat different from what Refn filmed, and maybe I'm misremembering this, but I if I'm remembering right from interviews with Brubaker, it sounds like Refn and one of his producers or usual screenwriters would add a lot of stuff, and it sounds like Refn films in a somewhat experimental way. If he just lets the camera sit, maybe lets the actors improvise a little. Brubaker did the script, but I've gotten the sense that he doesn't really feel it's his thing.
Ed Brubaker is a comic book writer.
He's most famous at Marvel for bringing back Bucky as the Winter Soldier.
But he did some good detective comics, though.
DC hasn't even collected.
He wrote some good Catwoman.
His Catwoman run is better remembered than his detective. He was at DC in the early 2000s and the late 90s, and then he was at Marvel from the mid-2000s to the early 2010s. And he's been independent since then. He's put out a lot of creator-owned comics, which I used to follow pretty religiously, and I now no longer do. And then most notably, most recently, though, he was head writer for Caped Crusader, the Batman show on Prime we just watched.
All right, which we covered, which is really great. Check it out if you haven't watched it yet.
The one other thing I want to apologize for, besides the run times, I do think Too Old to Die Young is a title. It's so cringe. It's impossible to say without laughing. So I would apologize for the title too. It is a disquieting way to open a show, though, by having a cop saying to his partner, I think I'm going to have to kill her, man, and then have him immediately sexually threaten a woman driver.
The goal is for me to immediately not like this cop. That's the whole point. And he's a creeper in the highest degree. And I thought the other cop was going to be neutral, but then we find out 12 minutes later when he finally speaks that he's in on it. And he joins in to try to get money from this girl's wallet or whatever. What percentage of cops do you think are like this in the real world, Bob?
I would say roughly 90%.
Grr, that's bad. I've always wondered that. It freaks me out sometimes.
It really is a very interesting show about depicting men menacing women and about depicting police corruption. It does take 12 minutes before Miles Teller, playing Martin, our nominal protagonist, speaks. So, Matt, who's going to lose in a speaking contest? Is it going to be Mew from Copenhagen Cowboy? Is it going to be Dougie from Twin Peaks The Return? Or is it going to be Martin from Too Old to Die Young?
It's going to be Dougie, Bob, because he will repeat parts of what people said. The 12 minutes of him not speaking was powerful, but I did feel like it was a bit excessive for an opening of a television show.
But maybe not a 90-minute episode.
Maybe not the beginning of a movie.
It takes like 15 minutes or something, but it's fun that both the Penguin and Too Old to Die Young have surprise deaths at the opening.
Yeah, I didn't see it coming in either show, which is great. How freaky is it that that cop took a picture of himself the minute before his death? That chilling.
Unsettling.
After this scene, we're introduced to the mob boss. He's an older fellow, and we witness him having his colostomy bag changed, Bob. I've never seen that happen. He does things that are mundane, that happen all the time, but you never actually see them. He did the same thing similarly at Copenhagen Cowboy with all the pigs.
Reffin really likes to do slow, kind of sinister and gross day-to-day things.
That's right. What he's...
Our boy Martin has to take the cell phone from his partner that shows his partner right before he's murdered and the picture of Jesus, the guy who's about to kill Martin's partner, Larry. He takes the cell phone with the picture to this drug guy who seems to have been both Martin and Larry's boss, Damien. While he's waiting in what seems to be the vending machine area of a skating rink, we see Damien's goon, Celestino, make some poor schmuck hit himself. Do you identify with that goon who was made to hit himself?
No, Bob, I don't identify with that goon. He made him crawl, too. Crawl across the floor. What a little clown.
I identify with that poor
goon
himself and crawl.
Poor guy.
It's interesting that you don't.
Poor Bob feels so beat down.
Were you excited when we actually see who's playing Damien, Matt?
Oh, yeah. It's Dr. Mbinga from Strange New Worlds. He's one of my faves.
Great on Strange New Worlds. He's great here. He's got a really interesting sense of timing and intonation in both Strange New Worlds and this. I'd also say he played Jamis in Dune. It's a fun role.
He has a great line. Martin asks how Jesus knows they killed Magdalene. Mm-hmm. And he's like, that's a good question. We'll look into it. Maybe you shouldn't have shot his mom.
Which is interesting because Martin's denying. He said he's trying to blame it on Larry. Yeah. The audience nor Damien actually believe him. The woman that Larry was going to text that selfie to is a woman named Amanda. She's got a little bit of a habit, and she's trying to blackmail Martin into keeping quiet. She wants $10,000. Martin lowballs her to $2,000. And I really love the performance of the woman playing Amanda because she has this, call it like a junkie expression when Martin says $2,000.
Right.
And you know she's going to accept it, and it's a great.
Because she knows she can buy some blow with it. That's all she wants.
If our guy wasn't unsympathetic enough, hanging out with drug dealers, lowballing his dead partner's girlfriend, getting in on sexual extortion, we find out something even worse about Martin.
We find out that he's sleeping with a 17-year-old Janie, who goes to a high school. He picks her up at the high school. She's smoking.
So she's just smoking in the back of his car. And he tells her to stop, and she does not.
No one has any respect for him at all.
Nobody has any respect.
And Janie apparently wants Martin to meet her father, which is insane.
They go up to the house, and did you clock that eye-shaped window on Janie's dad's house?
I did. That was pretty creepy.
It really is. And Matt, were you happy to meet Janie's father?
We finally meet him, Bob, and it's Billy Baldwin. And he says that she was 16 when they were first started getting together, so this is even worse than what we originally thought. And he goes through the house and shows Martin Janie's middle school graduation film, and then tells him a joke about he wants to get him a copy of the film, The Graduation. That is so... It's
what worse is, I don't even know if it's a joke. He sincerely, like, you would enjoy
it. He might. Billy Baldwin's character is so coked up anyway, it's insane.
So Matt, since you didn't identify with the poor guy that Celestino was making crawl and hit himself, do you identify with cokehead Billy Baldwin holding up a stuffed tiger that belongs to his daughter, and then growling and stroking its haunch as he talks to his 17-year-old daughter's 30-year-old boyfriend?
When he starts groping the bottom of the tiger while asking if he's going to stay over the night, freak me out.
Be the tiger, Matt.
No, I'm not going to be the tiger. I don't want to be either of them. I don't need
you'll be happy to know that when one of my boys came over the other morning who had watched this show, I picked up my cat. the growl.
Oh, God.
The Billy Baldwin stuff kind of steals the episode. Wild. Then another thing I did want to bring up quickly is we meet Martin's captain. And she's this weird mix of vaguely maternal, but also pretty smarmy. Your old Irish dad cop full of blarney.
I like how she's completely oblivious to what's going on with Martin and gives him a promotion. But then I'm like, is she oblivious? Does she? My question here, Bob, is they eventually have a wake for Larry. Where does this wake take place? Did you see? Like, what is this restaurant there?
Yeah, it seems to be some sort of Asian breakfast spot. It is very strange.
Even the bathrooms in that place are creepy. Like,
I love to do my police corruption in a brunch spot. The thing I wanted to close out on before our favorite moments was Damien has this line. He's captured Amanda. He's had her tortured to figure out that she dropped the dime to Jesus about Larry and Martin. And he has this line about he employs men, hate women, which was very haunting. And then we don't see it, but the subtext is that Martin probably kills him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she's dead.
So, Matt, what was your favorite shot of the episode?
It'd have to be the shot of Billy Baldwin in silhouette doing the Nixon impression at the very end of his scene.
Was it I'm not a crook, or was it a different line?
I'm not a crook.
I am not a crook. Classic. The one I liked was, and a lot of this show, I hope you like looking at Miles Teller, because a lot of this show is just you looking at Miles Teller. But it's sitting impassively before the window in the interrogation room at after his partner's kill, then the window looks out on the freeway, traffic behind him, and it's very beautiful, but also surreal.
Bob, my favorite performance, though, like we've already said, it has to go to Billy Baldwin as Janie's dad. Best performance in this episode. What about you?
I can't remember if Billy Baldwin comes back or not. He might not. But I'll give it to Lance Gross. He plays Larry, the partner who gets killed in the opening. It's very menacing. It's a really, really good job there. RIP to the character. We hope you enjoy our coverage of Penguin and Too Old to Die Young, everybody. It'll be probably 2 Saturdays before we're back with the next episode, just because of recording schedules. Sorry about that, but stick with us. Thanks for listening to Uncanny Treks.
Thank you for listening, guys.